Sebastian, good morning.
Good morning.
Soon you will have an opening or release?
Sure, there'll be two moments. There'll be two moments. On the 2nd of February, there'll be an official launch of the book, Pondicherry. This will happen at the French consulate. And the hopes is not only that it be a launch, but also a possibility of having a debate on heritage. The idea is to stimulate Pondicherry to take note of its beauty, to take note of its of its possibilities as a cultural hub. What does that mean? The idea that the perception, in fact the title of the debate is From Perception to Action. Normally the artist perceives a value, perceives a moment, perceives an atmosphere, and then hopefully other people, maybe politicians, maybe intellectuals, maybe will take up the perception of the artist and make it more active, in the sense that putting the money, putting the necessary energy behind the idea of a possibility and making it become a reality. My hopes is that my book, A Simple Artistic Approach to Pondicherry, will stimulate an awakening for Pondicherry that I think is dormant right now. The city is dormant to the fact that it has a potential as an artistic hub. It is completely alive for its economic and tourism, but it has no sense of its historic value at this moment. This is my perception.
Why Pondy?
Because it's next door. Because the challenge for me has always been to try to look at the familiar, to look at what is closest to me and challenges me, because it's very easy. I am a professional photographer. I travel to exotic places all the time, and I can now take pictures with my eyes closed of exotic places. It's very easy. Almost anybody can do it. It's much more of a challenge to deal with the familiar, to deal with the obvious and make it interesting. How do you make it interesting? That becomes the talent of the artist, to take something that others pass by continuously and are not challenged by it, simply because maybe it hasn't become part of the know, in the sense that nobody is observing that. Artistic observation is very simple in its truth. In as much as the artist just has to focus. Once he has focused, once the photographer or artist or whatever has focused, then it gives it another reality. For me, it was interesting to see what reality would come of Pondicherry once it was photographed. All I did was record areas that interested me, empty rooms, buildings, people, and then made a pathway, because a book is a path, for people to walk through, read through, observe, and I joined it with words of authors that could hopefully give another tone, another dimension to the whole thing, which is basically the joy of contemplating through photographs and then bringing it into writing. Why is that different? Because the capture of a photograph is very instantaneous, even though it takes a long time to do a good picture. The writer has the joy of being alone and meditating. So the two things together hopefully will have pulled out of Pondicherry, out of the familiar, out of something very obvious, hopefully something very interesting.
So three other persons who are Pascal Bruckner, Alash Kapoor and Dr. Amin Jaffer are in the book with you with
yes,
the words.
Yes, they have joined in this adventure by adding their vision, each one in a very different way. My hope was to try to find authors that are also friends, but that are also friends of Pondicherry in the sense that they have passed either a long time or a short time. Let's start from Pascal. Pascal Bruckner is probably one of the key intellectuals at this moment in France. He has recently written a treatise on a very interesting subject, which is happiness, which I think would interest everybody right now. And he was a type of polemic intellectual figure that I needed to open up the French nostalgic response to Pondicherry, because the French have a way of being very nostalgic and maybe not objective enough. Bruckner has been very objective in the sense that he opens his statement by saying that when he came 25 years ago, he hated Pondicherry. So it's interesting when you come with an aggression of that kind to then be softened up by the fact that you've received photographs of a place that you hadn't been to in a long time, and all of a sudden you relive that moment and you reevaluate your perception from that moment. Akash is a worldly Pondicherrian, as I call him. He is a probably of our Orwellian, we can give him the word intellectual or writers or whatever, he's probably the one that has traveled the most and has seen the most and has been affected the most. He recently presented his book at the Jaipur Literary Festival. He is a heroic kind of figure, and I wanted his perception as an Indian, as a Pondicherry and as an Aurobindian. Amin Jaffer is probably the most VIP character because he is the director of Christie's Asian section in London, and he is the director of Christie's at their office in Bombay. Obviously, someone who has a vision of the world, but at the same time, when he was very young, in his in late teens or early 20s, he studied in Pondicherry. Mm-hmm. And he did a thesis or a paper, if I'm not mistaken, on French colonial furniture. Mm. And so he traveled, or tried to, did the same itinerary that I did, to try to break in almost into these closed homes and see what was lingering there. So he understood perfectly the sense of what I was doing, because he's a hunter equally as I am, looking for beautiful things, looking for beautiful moments and things that are hidden, forgotten, and probably not evaluated enough until, unfortunately for him, from my point of view, but fortunately probably for who he works for, that brings value when they are in auction. For me, it was his sensibility to the research that he had done as a researcher of art in a place that I was interested in. I shared my photographs with him, he shared his thoughts.
That's nice. So you basically, in a way, provoke them to join you.
The word provocation is nice, because I think any discussion is hopefully a little bit of a provocation, and it's going to be interesting. Everybody was met in a different way. I met at a party in, of all places, in Venice, in Italy, and I spoke to him about Pondicherry. He said, one of the places I love him most in my life, and I said, I'm doing a book. He said, send me the pictures, and I said, will you do a text? And he said, yes.
That was that.
Yeah. As far as Pascal Bruckner was suggested to me by several common friends, and then was contacted by the French consulate, and he instantly wrote back and said, I love them, yes, thank you. And then Akash, as a fellow Orwellian, was approached me very directly. I said, Akash, I like the way you write. What do you think of the pictures? And are you interested in being part of this project? Mm. All very direct and simple.
Pascal, his part is going to be in French, or is also in English?
All three texts are both in English and in French. Wanted also with the publisher to look at the idea of doing it in Tamil. But expenses and probably sort of a rejection of this expansion from my part and on the part of the publisher, because maybe didn't consider that it was so important or interesting. The book is obviously, hopefully, will travel in Europe and together with the show and together with the images. I would have liked a local language, let's put it this way, so to anchor it in a tradition that is part of also the architecture. But that didn't happen. It has both the English and the French, because I think they're two totally different forms of expression. And if you read Pascal's text in French and you read it in English, though the translations are beautiful and it took us a hell of a long time to do them well.
But each language is
its own dimension. Mm-hmm. And I think French requires to be, if you can, read in French.
Just a thought, because I know that in Pondicherry, there are Tamil people, especially in the area, I think you were moving through, they don't speak Tamil.
I know.
They speak only French.
That is sort of a snobism, I think, in a way that they like to, and that's wonderful, because snobism is just a question of choice. It's not anything more aggressive than that. So I kind of respect that, but at the same time, my more worldly snobism on the other side is to make this project as large as possible, but it'll be for the next one, or maybe a next edition if this one gets sold out.
And it's my just a curiosity, how you managed to get into the houses?
Well, the project has been going on for almost 4.5, almost 5 years. Mm-hmm. I've done it as a pet project, which was always requiring my extra energy because I had my work, I had my family, and I had the rest. And then all of a sudden, as I sat down and said, okay, now I relax and go to the beach, and then it's, oh my God, you've got the Pondy project. So I would head back out. And I was helped a lot by friends in two ways. Intac, that basically is probably the only group, heritage concern group that is trying to catalog the houses, had a series of addresses. Oh. Then there's a very effective way of going with my assistant door to door. We would go door to door like Bible salesmen and knock on the door and say, we're doing this. We had letters of presentation from the French consulate, from Intac, from the regional office and everything. We were very sort of, how can I say, apropos for the job. Many people would throw the door on our nose. But those that did, and mostly it was interesting, the Tamils, the houses on the Tamil part, which is called the Black Town historically, were very friendly and very willing. In the French Quarter or the White Town, it was more formal, more difficult, more calling up a friend of a friend. And these things require luck. These type of projects require luck, require a friendly moment, and also require that people be approached in a way to give the importance of what they have. The whole idea is I tried to explain to them that they were hiding or keeping away from the public eye something that belongs to humanity. Mm-hmm. Now, to explain how somebody's house belongs to humanity is rather difficult, but if you have a house that was built in the 17th century or 16th century, or you have a very recent thing house, obviously, strangely enough, some people think, oh, but it's not nice to be seen. Why? I have to fix it up. Or I say, no, that's exactly what I want to see. Mm. I want to see that patina of age. I want to see the disorder. I want to see all of that. And
but with that, you also sneak into maybe our hidden thoughts, hidden ways. People are not really always ready to expose.
I agree. That is the challenge. That is a challenge of being a voyeur. That is a challenge of being what I consider myself in this book, especially the way I approached it, to be a sort of a flâneur. Flâneur is this French word describing, as Baudelaire would, these fairly eloquent pseudo-intellectuals that would walk around a city just for the joy of observing the city, just for letting it wrap around you, sitting down at a cafe, making observation on people, trying to get behind the walls, maybe peeking into somebody's courtyard while they're drying the laundry, or maybe trying to befriend a lady that you see passing by. Just this fact of wanting to force yourself into people's domestic life. It seems to be an aggression, but that, in part, photography is that. In part, it is an aggression. That's why certain tribal groups in certain forlorn countries are afraid of the camera because they think it steals their soul. Yes, maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. My job as someone who is an observer is to try to go as deep as I can. Obviously, it becomes an obsession. It becomes a fetish. But why not? It's great to have fetishes. It's great to try to force yourself beyond the door. If I've been successful, that will be for others to judge. It was exhausting. It was difficult. But that's the only way that I think any artistic project, especially a photographic project, it has to sort of go beyond what is obvious, especially in a place like Pondicherry, where everything that is on this side of the white walls is very, very obvious, and there are many beautiful pictures of that. I didn't want that. I didn't want that. The wonderful postcards that can be gotten of that. I wanted to get beyond those white walls that everybody sort of walks by. So that's why it took 4 years. That's why it took so much time. And at a certain point, I just had to draw the line. I had to say, enough. There were many houses that I couldn't get into. I would go back four or five times, and they say, it's again, you're here again, I told you no. And I said, well, please, please. And then I'd have somebody else call, I'd have somebody else. This. I moved everything simply for what I perceived from the outside. Mm. Sometimes I would be, after all this effort, be completely unhappy with what I found inside. because it had already been transformed or it had already. So sometimes my efforts brought nothing. Sometimes I was even called in by people that had heard that I was going around, and sometimes that would be a wonderful surprise. So there's a mix of everything. I think what I have reached is not the ultimate. I could do another book easily on what was not allowed to me and try again. And maybe if I go with this book and show them, I've met two people who had said no, and I show them the book now. I said, "Oh, but if I'd seen the book," and I said, "Well, yes, if." So it was an interesting relationship with a culture of a small city that is rather provincial, and it has no sense of what contemporary art is at all, because they're not contemporary. And the lack of a contemporary understanding of the intrusive nature of contemporary art, in a way, made it difficult. But that's okay. That was part of it. And it was interesting to try to make something contemporary, a contemporary project, out of a research in a rather antique lifestyle, antique. But it's just that, the transformation from what was to what is and what may be, that is interesting.
Where this inauguration exhibition gonna happen?
Well, the presentation at the French consulate on the 2nd of February is unfortunately on invitations only, because the French consulate is offering a cocktail party, which I guess he wants to keep rather restricted. So and the debate, whereas everybody is welcome to come at Arodan Gallery
on the 3rd. Yeah,
on the 3rd at 6:30, if I'm not mistaken. And that's where there'll be much less talk, and the images will be there. So the images will be there.
So there would be on display all the images from the book?
No. There are too many. There'll be, I think, about 30 images on display of 125. What my hopes are is that I will have different rotating shows in different places. There, it's scheduled to go from Pondicherry, it's scheduled to go to Delhi, and then to Bangalore, and then to Mumbai. Hopefully I'll add on images as I go. No, it's too big. The images are printed in large size, so the and varying sizes, but some in large size. And most of the spaces that are being offered to me for now are rather small. So I can't make it too big. And maybe I don't want even. I tried to choose, make a selection of what I think are the most significant. But obviously, what I choose for Pondicherry is slightly different than what I'll show in Bangalore or what I'll show in Mumbai. I try to sort of adapt it to what I think might be interesting to the local
point of view,
to how contemporary the locals are in certain things. I don't necessarily want to challenge too much, but I do, and it's interesting to see the mix, how it works. For me, it's a curiosity to see what works and what doesn't work.
My curiosity, Auroville?
Auroville in my life? Auroville in my life comes into my life almost 20 years ago, when I was moving out of Milan with my family, because I was sort of disgruntled and dissatisfied with city life, but I still had to earn a living as a photographer, a fashion photographer at the time. And we moved to a small fishing village about an hour and a half from Milan. And from there, a friend of mine told me, "Listen, you can either move to somewhere in Latin America," because my last name is Cortez and I speak Spanish, and I was always looking for something more exotic, "or you can consider Auroville." I said, "Auroville? Where is Auroville?" And he says, "Well, when it's the right moment, it's the right time, you'll look it up." And we didn't think about it for years and years. Then my wife, shortly after the birth of the second child, decided that she needed a breather from me, from the family, from everything, and came to Pondicherry and spent, I think, 2 weeks in Auroville, and came back with books and tapes and videos and whole stories.
And enthusiasm, probably.
Enthusiasm. and a book, a specific book, which was a book on Sri Aurobindo. And I think I got more excited about this Indian mystic that explained to me, as I'd never been explained to, the unification between East and West, because that has always been my obsession. And also in this book, there is this search, how cultures overimpose or superimpose or blend or whatever, fusion, whatever we want to say. So that on an intellectual plane. Then on a spiritual plane, we had been experimenting with various things at the time. And at some point, there was a moment in my life where I said, okay, well, let's take a year and we go. And we were welcomed by the community. I said, well, we'll see what happens. And then from there, 1 year became 2 years, and 2 years became, and here it's been almost 10 years, and here we are. So I don't think that it was not guided by a shining star. It was just guided by a lot of little stars that sort of filled the sky at the right moment. And for now, I'm glad to be in Mother India. I'm glad to be in Mother's presence. I'm glad to be able to refresh my search for the joy of doing my work in a country that challenges me all the time. I was losing that sense of the challenge in Europe in a way. I was working in a totally different dimension of photography. I was doing commercial photography mostly, so I was not interested so much in telling stories. I had left that behind at a younger part of my life. Now I've come back full circle, and so India, Auroville, has also allowed me that space, that dimension, that energy to fish back into probably what had originally attracted me to the work that I do, which I just gotten sidetracked for money, for fame, for whatever. Now I'm back to doing what I should have been doing all along. And
it's never too late.
Sorry?
It's never too late.
No. Never too late. It's right totally time. Different. But in a country that has that is offering a country and in an experiment, because I consider Auroville, what I like about it is not an ashram. It's a laboratory.
It is, yeah.
It's a laboratory. It is the Wild West in many ways. But I think I can walk down Main Street as well as any other cowboy. And we are mystic cowboys in a way, because this is very much the frontier in a way, which all frontiers have their ups and downs. And this is a frontier town in as much as we have just... the pioneers have come. They've thrown down trees. They've grown trees. Now the cyclone has come and taken their trees away. And now maybe there's a different dimension that has to come in. I'm a little worried about what it will be, because all this light is confusing and it doesn't leave much area for a shady area to hide in. But we'll see. The wonderful thing about a laboratory is that there's constant experimentation. And the constant experimentation, with all its dangers, because a laboratory can blow up at some point if you mix too many potions together, is the tension of something new happening. And this, I think, in a moment, especially for my children, I wanted my children to understand that there are alternatives to ways of seeing, ways of thinking, ways of doing. And Auroville has been a paradise for them.
Children is great, yeah.
And I think that...
And they are the most adaptable to what we should or be, but they are the most adaptable.
Because they have this wonderful free mind that is absorbing and that is not conditioned. Sometimes I think the parents condition, obviously, their children. And sometimes maybe they don't know enough about what Auroville is all about. Sometimes I question why we don't give them more information. But maybe it's wonderful to be without information also and just be completely raw to what's happening. Auroville, for me, has become home. I don't I'm not here coming here and forgetting my past. I haven't come here with in my vision the word no. I didn't say no to anything before. I'm yes to everything. Because I often sense that there are many Aurovillians that have come here that said no to something and have come here hoping to find a big yes. The big yes is a difficult one.
Well, it's also about our inner progress.
The inner progress can be done almost anywhere, but certainly Auroville challenges you to
bigger extent.
Your best or your worst sometimes.
True. So true.
And that's what I like. I like the fact that we are not living on anything that comes from our past that is sort of explicative, like last names or anything like that. We have to reinvent ourselves. Some aspect of reinventing I was always doing anyway, because as someone who has to continuously offer a vision, you have to reinvent yourself constantly, whether it be in the marketplace or whether it be in your own artistic dimension. But Auroville has allowed me, and I think it's allowed other people of creative nature to take more space between the rumble of the day to day and their own existence, and that is almost an element of paradise nowadays. I think we have to all realize that we are in a paradise in a way. But paradise is dangerous, and paradise has its own new dimension, its own new rules. So all of that, for me, in fact, I'm working on a new project in my mind on this idea of paradise and about utopian visions, because the utopian visions have sort of run out nowadays. And why that is, maybe we've sort of come full circle. But Auroville is probably the most wonderful experiment of alternative and intentional communities that is still existing. So it's a privilege to be here. It's a privilege to participate, and it's a privilege to try to keep the project going in the hopes that we all sense how important it is. And yet how unimportant we are, because if we take ourselves too seriously, then we don't really challenge ourselves to the more spiritual aspect. So that's the big juggling point for me, how to consider it important and at the same time not important, how to let the spirituality come through, but at the same time put out engagements with the outside world, because I don't believe in only in the inner bubble. I like the in and out. Auroville has to offer to the outside world and take from the outside world and re-elaborate, because we have this privilege. We have almost a responsibility to that, because we are privileged.
To share, yeah.
That's my view. And so Auroville for me is a platform, is a wonderful platform, a wonderful dream, and the possibility of living in a dream is kind of, again, a privilege. And for my children, while they are young, I continue to say and tell them in a very boring way how lucky they are. And they say, yes, 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 of course. And then when they reach a certain level, I tell them to go out, because you're not supposed to feel too comfortable. Because Auroville also has a way of making you feel too comfortable. And that comfort sometimes subsides a little bit of energy that I believe, but maybe, you know, that's my again another fetish, that a little bit of uncomfortable
it's bringing up challenges, and yes, it makes you progress.
Yes, and it can't be only, you know, cleaning up trees. It has to also be challenges of an intellectual nature, and trying to bring it up as high as you can. And an artistic, if my two children will be that way, requires a global view. Nowadays we have to move as much as possible, but that doesn't mean we have to move ourselves physically necessarily. We can move with our mind. Internet allows such a wonderful connection to the world, but absorb different things in a bit. Sometimes, strangely enough, Auroville can also become very provincial in its ways, very, very limited in its ways. The benefits and I see the drawbacks, and at the same time I'm challenged by the dream, I'm challenged by the vision, I'm challenged by what could be, and I hope that in my small way I can participate somehow to make this vision, the progress of this vision, and the possibility of a city that sort of is a constantly learning of itself, and it's a constantly a learning place, a constantly dynamic.
Growing
and if this
things.
Happens, and if this is the moment, but I lived for many years in New York, and of course that seems like the pinnacle of what's happening, but at the same time, what is happening? At this moment, we sort of, in the world, we need to sort of have a time for settling, a time for more quiet observation, a time for more interior, which some people can do in an apartment on the 110th floor. Other people need trees. Other people need... For me, it works. Yeah. For me, it works. For my children, it works. For my wife, it works. And I think you have to reassess. We sort of reassess every year and say, okay, how's it going? We're all here, we're happy. And
everything's different.
And because of the challenge of a laboratory we have to understand. And I use this word because I think Mother was courageous enough to say that, to make everybody feel a bit of a rat in an experiment. Say, hey, this is an experiment, okay? Be aware.
Okay. Stay flexible. Huh?
Stay flexible, stay cool, stay tight, and look around and beware and be challenged by it and the joy of being challenged. Don't feel too comfortable because that's not what you're supposed to do. That karma yoga, that involvement, that is to challenge yourself and others. If we become too complacent, then we are no longer an efficient laboratory. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see. I think the age, you know, the age of Auroville, it's 40 years old. That's an age of maturity in a way, but at the same time of great activity. The wisdom might not be there yet, but I certainly had no wisdom at the age of 40. I don't think I have it now, but it's an interesting age in the process of a city. If we think how long it took the great cities to become what they are, it took
really
much,
young.
Much longer.
That's
so
really
it's
young, yeah.
So we shouldn't even demand us maybe too much of ourselves at the same time. Mm. We should enjoy what there is. But this tension and back and forth and this thinking is also productive, and it makes, I think, if we challenge ourselves and in a communal way, and if we work together, we could offer to the planet, which is requiring an enormous amount of answers, maybe a small quantity of answers that are searched for. Hopefully.
Examples.
Sorry?
I see it like living examples.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the most important thing, because that's the best way to teach, is by what you do, and by what, not so much by what you say, but by what you do. And if we can challenge ourselves to be that way, I think we're in a country that is also incredibly tolerant and incredibly acceptant of an experiment like this. This would never have existed and gone further in the United States. They would have asked us to pay all our taxes and what are we doing, and it would have not functioned in Italy, because we would again would be considered off the wall. And the wonderful thing about Mother India is that
but there's a city on the north of Italy, it's tend to have similarities with Auroville, but it's really close up.
Yeah,
as far as I know,
it is much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It is a much smaller community. I don't think it isn't. It's much stricter. Sure, there are intentional communities. There are many, many, I think, all over the world. You could count more than 200. But they're much more like an ashram, much more closed. We are, luckily, so much different than an ashram. But it's probably what makes
That's
it more
true.
Difficult.
Yeah.
We are so much more an open experiment that has as few rules as it can to survive, but at the same time, to survive you need rules. So you're rewriting it as you go along. And
freedom can be dangerous. Yeah,
absolutely, it's very dangerous. It's very challenging. It's very the idea of chaos and the idea of, you know, in this total chaotic process, which is life. I mean, life is chaos in essence. We try though to establish some kind of process. I think the history of humanity has shown that we're always trying to establish some kind of guidelines. But the guidelines of the past have brought what they've brought. We are supposed to write some new ones. I don't know if we have as yet. I certainly am not going to stand on any pedestal and declare anything. And I don't know if we can as yet. And I don't know if we should. We should just be. And if this being, and if we have the energy from above, and if we are protected, and if we are effective, then the example, as you say, will make us something of importance to others. But I think only history will tell, and only our children will tell us, and the rest. We are babies in the process of history.
We're not very concerned about that because it's not our purpose.
No, but you have to reflect sometimes on purpose. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I do it once a year.
Once a year.
And then just to keep it tight and to keep it a little.
Let's just go to one small question. Your book is going to be available in Oregon?
Yes. I have I'm on my little tour now to put it in the various bookstores in Oroville. The publisher has the formal bookstores. I have sort of the more informal. We have sort of a strange relationship because I wanted to keep some copies of my own that I would distribute around. So I haven't gone to see where the publisher's put it. He's guaranteed me that he has. I was waiting till the last days before the launch to then go around and see. It should be available in all the formal bookstores, and then hopefully I'll be able to work out some understandings with different places that informally will offer it. It should be in the visitor center. It should be in those places where you.
But that will be from next week onward, probably.
It'll be available from the 3rd. The idea is to combine it with the opening and take advantage of the hot moment before everybody forgets and goes on to something else. But hopefully, I'm on my way actually now to the visitor center to see if the publisher has spoken to them at all.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All the best.
Yep. Chidananarupa Shivoham Shivoham Namrotyarna Shanka Namejati Beda Pitaneva Meneva Matana Janma Nabandhu Mitram Guru Neva Shishya Chidananda Rupa Shivoham Shivoham Chidananda Rupa Shivoham Shivoham Aham Nirvikalpo Nirakara Rupo Viburvyapya Sarvatra Sarvendriyani Sadamme Samadva Namuktir Nabanda Chidananda Rupa Shivoham Shivoham Chidananda Rupa Shivoham.